Now we've got a guest here this morning, and his name is Robbie Weeks, and this is one of his favourite songs. So let's introduce him with this song. I just want to see him get wound up, because I remember years ago we were at a big campfire out at Pine Grove, and we're in his car. We were coming home from a golf day at Bemorm, and we went out to this guy's place, and we got this song going. Here it is, Robbie. Sing along, mate.
Beautiful.
Oh, you've still got it, mate. Beautiful. Good on you, Robbie.
Good morning, Jimbo.
Morning, Rob. How are you, Cotter?
I'm terrific. Good to be up here in Echuca again.
Good on you, mate. I'm glad you're made it finally to come up here, because you haven't been the best of health, have you, the last 12 months or so?
Look, let me just say the best part of me is at Cabrini Hospital in Malvern. But I'm here.
Good on you, mate.
Can I say a quick hello to a couple of blokes?
Yeah.
I'd just like to, because I haven't spoken to them for ages, and they all owe me money, actually.
Right.
So if you don't mind, here we go. Terry and Francie Malone.
Right.
Down at Ballandella.
Yes.
G'day, Terry. Morning, Francie. Judy and Neville Sims.
Who's Judy and Neville Sims?
They're very, very interesting people. Wheat farmers out at Mediamo.
That's right.
Lovely people. And Robbie and Dottie Fraser.
They're still with us, are they?
The pig farmer.
Are they still with us?
Well, of course they're still with
good.
Us. Lovely people too. So if they'd like to sort of send the checks, that'd be perfect.
Would you like to insult them as well? Because
No, I won't. Never do that.
Good idea, Rob. Ah, dear. So welcome along to EMFM 104.7. Now, Robbie, he's one of the people behind Countdown and is my guest today. Robbie Weeks, who was the producer-director of Countdown for how many years, Rob?
I did the first 100 shows.
First 100?
And then I went away and did some other things. And then I executive produced it for another couple of years.
Right.
It ran for about 10 years.
Mm.
It was fantastic.
Did you have a good time doing that?
There were some trying moments, but it was when you look back at it, you know that it made a huge contribution to people's memories. So it was good.
Yeah. Very good. It says here, I've got to read it from the little script to get you going, but before we talk about Countdown, let's find out a bit about your background. How did you get into the strange world of television?
Well, it's interesting. I was in the advertising industry, and I must have shown a bit of promise there, because the company that I work for asked me to go on a four-year advertising associates course at RMIT in Melbourne.
Mm-hmm.
And I went there the first night, and I didn't like it.
Right.
They was talking about Caxton and his press, and I thought, not for me. So I went across to the bursar, and I said to the bursar, look, have you got anything else? He said, pardon? I said, I don't like it. Have you got anything else? So he said, well, what are you interested in? I said, well, television's fairly new. I might have a crack at that. He said, we've got a course starting tonight in Building 9 called Television Studio Production Techniques. I said, that'll do. He said, it's been booked out for 2 years. So I went down to Building 9 and joined them.
Hmm.
I wasn't supposed to, but I joined them. So that's how I got into television.
Right. Yep. And did you, when you got into television, though, what was the story there? Like, where did you go to?
What happened was I actually, for some strange reason, I topped the course. So I got myself a job down at Channel 10 in Traralgon.
Oh, right.
GLV10 in Traralgon, which was fantastic for me, because it gave me the chance to learn about the business.
Okay.
The RMIT course gave me the opportunity to develop an interest in it.
Mm.
Now I had to make it work.
Yep.
So I did that. You'd have to build your own sets. You'd have to light the studio.
Oh, right.
You'd have to. On one occasion, Keith McGowan, many of your listeners might remember Keith, used to do overnight on 3W.
Mm.
He was comparing a show I did called Teen Time on 10.
Teen Time on 10.
And you wouldn't believe it, Jim. He phoned up one morning and went, I can't speak.
Yeah.
And I said, what's the pattern? Laryngitis. So he couldn't compare the show. So I built the set, lit it, and had to compare the show as well, which was a bit different. So that was great experience when you're 20 years of age.
Yeah, well, that's definitely right, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
What do we got here? So how did you get to the ABC to be a director at the ABC, mate? I mean, that's pretty high up there, you know, like. So you were at Channel 10?
Well, it's interesting because after I worked at Channel O, I beg your pardon, the GOV 10 in Traralgon. Channel O, now called Channel 10, was about to open in 1964.
That's
so
right.
I applied for a position and got a job as a director there. And I did a number of shows. They did 625 episodes of the Magic Circle Club. I directed 525 of them. Uptight, which is where I first met Meldrum. I did 400 of those. At Commotion, I did 400 of those.
Oh, right.
I did it, yeah. So I did I'd done a lot of shows,
yeah.
And then I was retrenched. They said, Jeff Raymond, a lot of your listeners might remember Jeff Raymond, the great newsreader. He and I were both retrenched on the same day.
Oh, okay.
And it was interesting, actually, because we both finished up at the ABC.
Yeah.
And then we went back to, the only ever time we ever went back to Channel O was we went back when he won the award for Best Newsreader and I won the award for Best Director, so I thought that was quite ironic.
Certainly
it was great fun.
Yeah.
Our two-fingered salute to Channel O as we walked out the door was most interesting.
I can imagine. All right, Robbie, look, we'll have a little bit of a break. What about you have another sip of what you've got in your hand there? And
unfortunately, it's water.
It's only water. This time last night it wasn't.
No, exactly right.
So we're going to play a song from one of your mates. We'll have a bit of a talk about him in a minute, actually, when you come back on air.
Okay. All right?
Love is in the air, everywhere I look around.
Yeah, that's Mr. John Paul Young. And what was his nickname, Rob?
I have no idea. Squeak.
Squeak, yeah.
That's right. When I say I have no idea, I always used to call him John.
Did you?
Because he's a delightful fellow. One of the best blokes in the business, John.
Yeah, right.
And I had the pleasure of... Actually, Jim, what's interesting about that particular song that you just played is I was there at the gestation of it.
Right.
Now, just imagine this. I'm at... Albert Studios in Sydney, and I had to meet a bloke. Now, at this stage, I'm directing Countdown, but that's my job. And I had to meet a fellow at Albert Studios in Sydney, and the person wasn't there. So the people at Albert said, look, just sit in the control room, and if you don't mind, and we'll let you know when the bloke comes in. So, fair enough. So I go in there, and Harry Vander and George Young had just finished the backing track. And I said hello, they said hello. And they said, let's get the singer in. And in came John Young, John Paul Young. And he did one rehearsal and did it in one take, that song you just heard.
Is that right?
Sensational.
And you were there at the actual time?
I was sitting in the back of the control room and I thought, well, that's not a bad tune. So imagine how thrilled I was when it played at the Sydney Olympics for a 15-minute segment. And John's still singing it and it still stands up because it's a terrific piece of music. And he's a terrific singer and a really good bloke.
Good on you, mate. Yeah, wonderful. Yeah. All right, Robbie, look, I know you've been spent a fair bit of time overseas before you, when you were with the ABC, doing a lot of sports coveraging, and you did a lot of what games was it? The Commonwealth Games?
Well, after I did Countdown for a while, I went and did Quest. Quest 76, 77 and 78, which was giving Australian talent in whatever way a chance to perform properly with symphony orchestras and whatever, and that was great fun. I did it with Peter Regan, terrific bloke, and we did that. Then I came back and executive produced Countdown for a couple of years, as I said, and then I went and did 10 years in ABC Sport.
Okay.
And that gave me a chance to do something which is a passion of mine, which is sport, and loved every minute. I did the America's Cup defence out of Fremantle.
Did you?
Yeah, yeah. That was great fun.
Yeah, I bet it was.
And what was really good, it was so boring. No, because we used to have supermarket trolley racing on the docks because that was between the ABC and Channel 9, and we'd sort of have a couple of strong blokes and we'd push a couple of the lighter females and push them as far as we could. We had 100 metres, 400 metres. We did that while those bloody yachts were out there, 26 miles out to sea on gauge roads. And it was great fun. Fantastic time.
Good on you, mate.
And a couple of Commonwealth Games as well.
Yeah. All right. Let's get back to Countdown and let's have a bit of a chat about Molly's infamous interview with, what about Prince Charles for instance, yeah.
Well, it was, I wasn't there.
Right.
The recent television program, series program that Molly had with, might indicate that I was, but it was shot at AAV Studios in Bank Street, South Melbourne, and it wasn't Ian's fault, I must say. It wasn't his fault that he couldn't get these words out. It's that the Prince's security wouldn't allow an auto cue.
All
now,
right.
The auto cue is what, you know, newsreaders have and what we had, but they wouldn't allow it, so Ian had to remember it, and of course the occasion overwhelmed him. As it would. And it was a lovely thing, actually, when Prince Charles, I do know this, after Ian had done, or Molly had done, you know, take 22, the Prince leant across and touched him on the knee and said, do you want me to do your bit as well? And it was shown in that series. Yeah. But that was for the bicentennial, the Queen's Silver Jubilee.
Right.
It was part of the album promotion.
Yeah, all right. Robbie, you're a very interesting man. Oh, yeah. Thanks, Marie. Tell us about that story that you told us yesterday about the guy in the pub when you were there with Molly in England. Yeah, I'm not going to... No, I'm not going to mention his name.
No. It's very interesting. All your listeners will know what it's like when you can actually... You know, when you see somebody, you think, I know that person. Mm-hmm. I know that face. And I was in a bar with Ian Meldrum. Now, that was not unusual.
Yes, right.
But I was in London. And this is this very small bar. And there was a bartender. There's a bloke standing at the bar. Me. And I put Meldrum and sat him down at a table. That's all. Nobody else there.
Yeah.
I'm looking at this guy's profile, the guy's ordering the drink, and I thought, I know that face. So I went, g'day. And he's turned to me and said, g'day. And I thought, I really know his face. Who is he? So I said, are you on your own? He said, yep. I said, go and sit with Ian Meldrum, sit over there. So I got the drinks and sat down. I'm thinking, who is this guy? And it was Freddie Mercury, the lead singer of Queen.
Wow. Yeah, is that right? Yeah,
absolutely. And the reason his face was familiar was before we left Australia to go to Los Angeles, New York and London, is that we were playing Bohemian Rhapsody.
And
of course, I was seeing his face every week, and now I'm watching him live from about a foot away.
Right.
But he was a good bloke.
Yeah, he was a nice bloke. Well, all right, let's have a bit of Queen, eh? Just, that's not it. That's, yes, it is. You are my best friend. Ooh, you make believe. Yeah, good tune there. You're my best friend from Queen. And Robbie was just telling us about how he ran into Freddie Mercury. What a coincidence that would have been. Now, there's some... tell us, Robbie, we've just been chatting while that's been on about embarrassed. You've been embarrassed a couple of times, have you, my friend?
I have. I can give you one instance, which I'd like your listeners to put yourself in my situation for the moment, if you would. I'm at the Siebel Townhouse in Sydney, and we're going to do an interview for Countdown with an overseas artist. Ian Meldrum is going to do the interview. And we've got it all set up, ready to go, in a corridor at the Siebel.
Right.
That's the only place where you get it. And the manager of the hotel came up to me with a phone, it's about half the size of about a brick size.
Yes.
And he said, he was the manager, and he said, there's a call for you. So it was Molly Meldrum, who's had missed his plane in Melbourne.
Mm-hmm.
And just as I put the phone down and thought, what am I going to do? The overseas star came around the corner to be interviewed by Molly Meldrum, and it was Willie Nelson.
Really?
And so I thought, what do I do? I mean, he's walking toward me. He's about 20 feet away. And I thought, I can't just say he's not here. So I put the hand out, pretended I was somebody important, shook his hand and said, sit down, Willie, and here we go. Roll. Got the camera rolled. Welcome to Countdown, Willie. How are you? So what we did is we did the interview. He had no idea who he was talking to. And then I took the film back and put Meldrum's voice in to ask the questions.
Oh,
we put that to air,
And
it was Willie Nelson. It was fantastic.
And it worked a treat?
Well, no, there were no complaints from his management, his record company, but there was a lot of shaking by me trying to remember what I knew about Willie Nelson, which was next to nothing.
Oh, Willie, yeah. Yeah, not a bad old dude being on the road again. Mm-hmm. Oh. Funny story.
On the road again.
Oh, yeah, Mr. Willie Nelson, on the road again. And good on you, Robbie, for that little story. That's a wonderful little story about Willie Nelson. now, Robbie, I know we are sort of related, because you ended up marrying my cousin Sandy.
I did.
Yeah, and when we found out that, that's my wife and I, when we found out you used to go down to Toot Garouk, and Sandy's brother invited us down, and we knew you were going down there, and we decided we would go down there with a group of people. We had a lot of fun down there at Toot Garouk, didn't we? You and Polly and Waddy and...
There's some late nights.
And Big Bob.
Big Bob McColl was the best cooker of fish flathead you've ever... Well, you know him. Mm. In fact, last night I had some... For those listeners, Jimbo actually did a fillet of fish... the flatheads, and he's got it from Eden, and he's gone and did the batter perfectly, just like Big Bob. Yes. So they were great days down there, weren't they?
Yes, they were wonderful days.
And Sandy, of course, is a wonderful singer.
She is.
People forget.
Great singer.
No, they don't forget at all, because she still sings, but in a choir these days. But she was fantastic, backing vocalist for the Don Lane Show.
Yep.
She worked with Graham Kennedy many years ago, and she also did Les Miserables for a couple of years.
That's right.
Had her own group called Patchwork with Neva Phillips and Helen Cornish. And Sandy, terrific talent, wonderful singer. And I met her on Music Unlimited. And I got the job, actually, because I wasn't a director at the ABC at that point. Having been retrenched at Channel O, I then went as a production assistant to the ABC, but happily a producer or a director got the shingles. And he got the shingles, so they said, could I do the show?
Yeah.
And that's where I met Sandy.
Okay.
And after several years, couple of years, those things happened. But terrific talent, Sandy Panty.
And she was in Cats too, wasn't she?
No, she wasn't. She was in Les Miserables.
Les Miserables? Yeah. I thought she was in Cats as well. No. Hello, Sandy, if you tuned in, darling. I know you are. I think you all think
she,
you will.
She tuned in.
I think so.
Hello, Sandy.
Yeah, hello, Sandy. We're all thinking of you, and your boy's behaving himself too. We had a lovely night last night on the back veranda, as we say, having a few flathead.
Yes.
Now, back in those days, Sherbet were a big, weren't they, Dan? Yeah.
There were two groups, Sherbet and Skyhooks.
Oh, all right.
Sherbet was a Sydney group. Skyhooks was a Melbourne group. And the wonderful thing about Sherbet was that they had different styles of music, but each of them were terrific musicians, and both of them shared, if you like, top spot, if you like, on Countdown as Australian bands. Because when we started Countdown, what's imperative to remember is that we were trying, as producers, Mike Shrimpton, myself, and Ian Meldrum, to elevate the Australian artists to be accepted by the Australian public as the overseas artists like Bowie were.
Oh, right.
And that was always tricky, because the Australian artists didn't necessarily get a didn't have a great necessarily great reputation.
Yep.
Should have done, but didn't. They were playing pubs.
Yeah.
And so Sherbet were there. They were fantastic. Daryl Braithwaite and the boys, Garth Porter, and Shirley Strawn, Greg McCainch, Ben Simons, with Skyhooks.
Mm.
And they liked each other. We all liked each other.
Okay.
We just got on with it.
Yep.
And it was just terrific to be able to do a lot of their shows and a lot of specials with them.
Now, this song, any stories on this Sherbet song? How's That?
Well, what was interesting about How's That is that they were very talented in the sense that they all love cricket.
Mm.
And somebody said to them one day, you couldn't write a cricket song.
Mm.
And they went, give us 10 minutes, or close enough. And then they came up with this wonderful song called, which has nothing to do with cricket, but it's called How's That?
Yeah. Great song. Good on you, Robbie. We're having a ball here this morning, singing away. Here's another bit of music that you used to fiddle around with a fair bit. Yeah, ooh, remember that, Robbie? Yeah,
I certainly do. That was written, by the way, on the steering wheel of my car.
Go on. Keep going.
I will, just briefly, if I may.
Yes.
I was sitting there with Brian May, the music arranger, who did the Rush theme and various other things, and we were sitting in the car outside the ABC Orchestral Studios in Waverley Road in Malvern, and it was pouring. And I said to him, would you like to write a theme for me? He said, "What? Like what?" And I went, I did these ascending chords, like dum, bum, 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 bum. And then I had this syndrome at the end of that particular piece. So I said, how about that? So we did it, and Sandy Pandy, that we spoke about earlier, your cousin, sang on that.
Yes.
With the other two girls.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was fantastic.
That's how it got it.
It started being tapped out on the steering wheel of my car.
While it was raining.
While it was pouring.
Count in.
That's it.
Oh, dear. Now, mate, you've been honoured by the government in some way or form, haven't you? You've received, back in 2014, an OAM. Is that right?
Yes, I was honoured by the, not by the government, but by the Governor-General, yes.
Mm.
Yeah.
Can you like to tell us a bit about that, mate?
Well, it came as a great surprise.
Yeah.
Firstly, it came as a surprise, and that this would be the same with, I think, all recipients. You don't apply for it. You know, somebody applies on your behalf, and then they have to substantiate the contribution you might have made to the community or to a particular profession. And I was honoured by accepting the award for broadcast television and the community. And much of that, I think, was done because I did a lot of teaching of production standards in Vietnam, Laos, South Africa and Cambodia, trying to help where I could people improve the way they went about the production of television.
Yes.
So all those lessons I learned all those years before at GLV 10 in Traralgon, I was able to put into that. So it happened, and I'm grateful, I suppose, I was recognised.
And when you were overseas, though, doing all these the television studios, you were teaching people how to actually run a TV station, weren't you?
Well, particularly, I mean, I'll give you an example, if I may. I'm in South Africa. The biggest, most watched programs in South African broadcasting is soccer.
Yep.
And because primarily it's a black population, and black producers were doing it. And so I was able to help those directors of soccer improve the coverage to reflect what you'd get with Match of the Day on BBC. And that was tremendously encouraging to me to be able to sort of, I don't mean give back to the community, that sounds a bit twee, but what it did mean was that I was able to share my experience, and they loved it, and they were so terrific. They were like sponges, not to do what I asked them to do, but to excite them into being able to do a coverage properly. So I'll give you an instance. When you have an indirect free kick in soccer, you have to ask yourself as a director, who's the most important person on the field and who's the least important? Because the ball's stationary. Now, the most important is the goalkeeper.
Right, yeah.
Because he's got to set the wall. The second most important is the line, getting the line right.
Right,
players.
So you zoom in on that sort of thing?
Yeah, you cut to that. The third most important is the referee who sets the line. And the least important person before the kick is taken is the player with the ball.
Is that right?
Yeah. Well, he can't do anything until the referee's satisfied that the line is right. And the line won't be right till the goalkeeper's satisfied. So it's prioritising. So I was able to assist like that, and their coverage was fantastic. They were just great.
Yeah.
Great to work with.
Very good, mate. All right. Well, we're going to have one of the group's song that you used to direct from Melbourne. Yeah. Remember this song, do you, Robbie? Come on, yes you do.
Yes. All my friends are getting married.
Thank you very much. Yeah, well, we are growing old, Robbie, aren't we?
We are indeed.
And it's great to have you here, mate.
It's great to be here. At my age, Jim, it's great to be anywhere.
Yes, that's right. That's very true too. Now, Robbie, Do you watch much television nowadays? Like, you were heavy into it back in the 70s. Did you, still watch a fair bit of TV now?
You know, it's strange, actually, Jimbo. I've got, in my opinion, and it's not the old man speaking, but in my opinion, television has become very formularised. I mean, the stars on television these days are blokes that cook you dinner. it's to me, it's lost some of the magic, a lot of the magic. And I was part of the magic time, and that's something that I reflect on. And I'm grateful for. Yes, I watch television. Generally, I watch sport on Foxtel.
Okay.
I mean, that's where I go. I watch a bit of ABC, but only for the news and here and there. But, not interested in building a house, mate.
No.
My hands have never said home renovation.
Because I remember you telling me years ago that if your child's chain came off the bike, you'd have to take it down to the service station. You get the guy to put the chain back on your bike.
I did it twice.
You did it twice.
And, yeah, I'm not very handy at those sort of things. In fact, I'm less than awful. By the way, I'd just like to say that I had a friendship with a bloke in Melbourne who I thought I have a friendship, but I had one, because I'll go back to Melbourne tomorrow, and he will never speak to me again after this interview, Graham Cook.
Graham Cook.
Yeah, he works for a community radio station called Golden Days FM. Several occasions he's asked me if I'd be kind enough to have a word with him, or not with him, but with a presenter on the show, on his station. And after this interview, he'll never ask me again. He'll never speak to me again, actually. So thanks for nothing, Jimbo. Yeah,
well, maybe you might have had a bit of luck there, Rob. Who knows? I don't know.
Another career thwarted.
Oh, look, mate, it's been a delight to have you here after you've had an amazing career. Countdown began in, November 1974? They thought it would only go for 6 weeks, but ended up running for 10 years.
Correct, absolutely.
Yeah.
It was amazing. And the first compere of Countdown was Grant Goldman. Because what we did is we had 8 programs, 6 half-hours, and 2 one-hour programs.
Yep.
The 6 half-hours were done, hosted by disc jockeys, Brian Goldman being the first, and the last 2 were one-hour programs, one hosted by Darryl Braithwaite and one by Shirley Strawn from Sherbet and Skyhooks, respectively. And then we were given the go-ahead for the next year, and we were thrilled about that. And then that continued for another 10.
Yeah. All right, Robbie, look, thanks very much, mate, for coming up and having a chat. I've been looking forward to this for quite some time, actually. Actually, even before the Molly show went on the TV.
Yes.
We've been talking about this. And it's finally happened, mate, so well done.
Thank you
Appreciate it very much, Jimbo.
And cheerio to all your audience. And I'm still waiting for the checks from Malone, Sims and Fraser.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Good on you, Robbie. Thanks, Gobber.